Chapter 6. A Calm Precedes a Storm. A crisis had arisen, and Rick and Scotty could only stand by helplessly. After all, what could mere males do in such a situation? Barbie decided that Rick and Scotty were to fly over to Whiteside and get diving equipment for Jan, so she could have her own. It was easy to agree on the type of face mask, snorkel, and fins, but everything bogged down when it came to color. Rick's own mask, snorkel, and fins were sea green. Scotty had a green mask, blue snorkel, and black fins. Barbie had a white mask, red snorkel, and white fins. "Look," Rick said impatiently, "what earthly difference does it make? The principal thing is comfort. If the fins feel good and the mask fits comfortably, that's it. Color? What difference does color make to a fish?" Barbie sniffed. "I wouldn't expect you to understand." Jan looked at him coldly and stated that she wouldn't know what difference color made to a fish because she was not a fish. "You swim like one," said Scotty diplomatically, but that didn't even get a smile in return. There was only one thing for the boys to do, and that was to make as graceful a retreat as possible. They did so and sat waiting under a tree in the orchard while raging debate went on between the girls on the porch. Rick looked over at the laboratory building. His father and the other scientists were hard at work on the project, he supposed. He felt rather left out, because they were too busy to talk with him, and when he went in to look around, he could only see stacks of paper covered with equations that he couldn't begin to understand. "I wonder when Marks will arrive," he mused. Scotty shrugged. "We'll probably find out when he gets here." Dr. Marks had agreed to join the team at Spindrift as soon as he finished running some of the team calculations through the computer at the Bureau of Standards in Washington. Tom Dodd would arrive with him, Steve had reported. Meanwhile, protection for the Spindrift team was under the direction of another of Steve's men, Joe Blake. Joe and another agent took turns in the lab, sleeping and eating there and emerging one at a time for a little exercise. And Joe and his partner were not the only protection. In the woods on the mainland, just out of sight of the tidal flat, a group of four Boy Scout leaders were encamped, working on special camping and pioneering qualifications that would enable them to become qualified instructors for their scout troops. The Whiteside newspaper had even carried a brief story about the scout activities. But Jerry Webster, Rick's friend and newspaper reporter, hadn't known when he wrote the story that the scout leaders carried an astonishing amount of armament for such a peaceful expedition. The Yonig agents, however, had been chosen for the assignment because they really were scout leaders in their home communities. The story would stand investigation. Barbie and Jan left the porch and walked to where the boys waited.
"We've decided,"
Barbie announced. The boys applauded politely.
"You see,"
she went on,
"I'm blonde and Jan is brunette."
Rick squinted at the girls.
"By golly, you're absolutely right."
He put a hand over his heart.
"One with hair filled with captured sunlight, and the other with hair like the raven's wing, filled with the gleams of moonlight."
Barbie threatened him with her foot.
"Be serious."
Rick composed his face into stern lines.
"I am."
"Well,"
Barbie continued,
"we decided that Jan should wear a white suit and white equipment. It will make her dark hair and tan look very dramatic. But of course, I can't wear white if she does."
This was beyond Rick. Why couldn't they wear the same color was outside of his comprehension. "Well, of course not," he murmured politely.
"So I'm going with you. We both have to have new bathing suits, a white one for Jan and a dark blue one for me. And I'm going to give Jan my mask and fins because they're white. So I'll have to get blue equipment for me, and my snorkel is red, and that just won't do because..."
Scotty held up his hand.
"Say no more. I will swap snorkels with you because mine is blue."
"See, I knew you would understand,"
Barbie said smugly.
I don't understand, but I'll trade anyway. Come on, let's go to Whiteside.
Jan remained behind because Steve had not given permission for the Morrisons to leave the island, and Rick refused to take responsibility in spite of Barbie's pleading. The best he could do was to promise to call Steve about it and perhaps get permission for future trips. The Skywagon landed at Whiteside Pier, and the trio went to the nearby garage where the Brant's car was kept. Hartz and Brant had decided that it was more convenient to have a car available for use at all times than to depend upon taxis or on friends. The local sporting goods store had a good stock of equipment, and Barbie was able to purchase what she wanted without difficulty. But when it came to the bathing suits, she debated over the large selection for an hour before choosing two that were identical except for color. Rick and Scotty waited impatiently, now and then prodding Barbie to just hurry it up. But she refused to be hurried. Back at Spindrift, Jan met them with a greeting.
That certainly didn't take long. Barbie, how on earth did you pick these out so quickly?
The boys just looked at each other. Their opinion was that Barbie had taken just 1 hour longer than necessary. Here, obviously, was that mysterious thing, the feminine mind at work. Rick observed the problem from the scientific viewpoint and got absolutely nowhere. The ways of girls defied analysis. Both boys had to admit, however, that the results of Barbie's shopping had been worth the delay. Their own rather shabby swim trunks, torn and stained from contact with undersea rocks and coral, suddenly seemed sloppy. But when Barbie examined the aqualung tanks distastefully and demanded that Rick paint them to match the new suits, both the boys put their feet down emphatically. The tanks are that color because they've been treated to withstand rust and corrosion, Rick stated. If we paint them, the paint will only get knocked off and they'll look terrible. I just won't do it. The girls exchanged a glance that seemed to say, boys, they have such silly, stubborn ideas. Jan had already gone through the exercise of clearing the aqualung hoses of water, clearing her mask while using the lung underwater, and using the reserve lever on the tank, and Rick had instructed her in the theory of diving. Now it was time to put what she had learned to the ultimate test. The boys hauled the equipment down to the beach in Rick's old coaster wagon, modified for carrying equipment, then directed the girls to check the regulators, check the tanks, and connect regulators to the tanks preparatory to diving. They lolled on the beach and watched. Scotty grinned. This is the life. Tony Briotti tells me it's always this way in primitive societies. The men loaf while the women work. I'm in favor of it.
I'm sure you are, Barbie said acidly.
Jan said nothing, but continued to work with meticulous care. Rick watched closely and was satisfied. There was ample equipment for all. Scotty helped Barbie into her gear while Rick instructed Jan. This is the tough part. If you make it, that's the end. From then on, all you'll need is practice. We'll all swim down to the 50-foot depth. Watch your ears and don't try to continue down if you feel any pain. Go back up a few feet and try to clear your ears. When we get to the bottom, I want you to take off all your equipment, swim away from it, and then swim back and put it on. Okay? Jan gave him a tremulous smile.
I think so.
Good. Plan how you'll do it. Remember, air is the last thing you'll need and the first.
I'll remember.
It was easy enough for a diver with plenty of experience and the confidence that experience brings, but Rick remembered from his own training that it was plenty rough the first time. He held the tank while Jan got into the harness and said reassuringly, "You'll make it. You're a natural for diving because you don't lose your head. That's just about the only really dangerous thing a diver can do." He got into his harness, then picked up his movie camera in its underwater case. At his signal, the four waded out into the cold water, splashed around a little to get accustomed to it, then put mouthpieces in place and prepared to don masks. Rick waited until last and called, "Everybody getting air?"
When they nodded, he put his own mouthpiece in place, checked to make sure the demand valve was working, then slipped the mask down from his forehead and went underwater. There was a convenient sandy space among the rocks at the 50-foot level. He reached it and turned to count noses. All were present. Visibility was good enough. He set his camera and took a position cross-legged on the sand. Barbie and Scotty took similar positions and waited. At Rick's signal, Jan slipped off her fins, which she placed carefully on the sand. Her weight belt followed, then her mask. Rick kept the camera going as she jerked the quick-release buckle on her harness, then pulled the tank over her head, keeping the mouthpiece in place. At the last moment, she filled her lungs with air, let the mouthpiece drop to the sand, and swam away. Rick followed as she went about 20 feet into the rocks and returned. Jan had planned well. She picked up the mouthpiece and held it high so the air rushed out, then popped it into her mouth and began breathing. She didn't bother with the tank harness yet. Instead, she picked up her mask, adjusted it, and blew it clear. Only then, when she could see and breathe, did she leisurely put the harness straps into position and swing the tank over her head and into place on her back. She buckled it on and added her weight belt. The fins were last. A flume of air from her exhaust, a sign of exhaustion, told Rick that Jan was tired. Probably the mental strain more than the exercise had left her too weak for further swimming. He slung the camera from a belt hook, took her hand, shook it solemnly, then led the way back to the beach. After a short rest, the others were anxious to go back in again, but Rick vetoed the idea. "We could," he admitted, "and probably no harm would come of it, but skin diving is the easiest thing in the world to overdo. Jan is tired, and she's excited, even if she doesn't look it. This afternoon, after we've had a little rest, we can come back again and just have fun. There won't be any strain on Jan then because she passed the last test with flying colors, so she can swim without worrying about whether she's meeting our standards or doing it the way we think it ought to be done." He grinned at the girl. "I know it was a strain, but remember, we've all been through it too." Jan had a nice smile.
"You're right. I was so scared I wouldn't do it correctly. Then, when I knew it was all right, I sort of fell apart."
Barbie arose.
"Come on, Jan, let's go shower and change."
She smiled with false sweetness at the boys.
"Now that you're through testing Jan, I'm sure you won't mind doing your own work. Goodbye now."
And she left them to pick up the gear and truck it back to the laboratory building where it was kept. Rick got to the shower first, then stretched out on his bed to wait for Scotty. It had been a fine day, he told himself. All was well. Yannick had the island covered like a blanket. The project team was going full speed ahead. They were having fun. Jan was just the companion that Barbie needed. All was right with the world. He turned over onto his stomach and bunched his pillow up more comfortably. Then why, he asked himself, did he still feel funny? What was the problem? Scotty came in from the shower, toweling vigorously.
"What's eating you, bro?" he demanded.
Rick turned over and stared at his pal. "Is it that obvious?"
"It is to me. What's up?"
"I don't know. I wish I did. Have you noticed how quiet everything is? It's like the day before a hurricane moves in. The ocean gets glassy and there isn't any wind, and you're almost afraid to breathe because the air is so charged, a breath might start the lightning."
"The calm before the storm. Well, maybe it is. I feel a little too. But what can we do about that?"
Rick shrugged as expressively as one flat on his back could manage. "Nothing. We can swim with the girls and we can keep working on the radio units, but there isn't a single darn thing we can do so far as the project goes. I wish there were. I feel left out." Scotty grinned. "You're never really happy unless you're up to your hips in trouble or a mystery. I know what's really bothering you.
A fine, fat mystery is afoot, and you haven't a shred of it you can call your own.
Rick had to grin back. There was much in what Scotty said. As long as the mystery of the two scientists remained unsolved, he wouldn't be really happy.